I am still Amy Smith, and it is still my pleasure to tell you a little bit about what we've learned in working with the endangered American burying beetle. I'm specifically going to be talking about their reproductive dynamics. In many ways, this is a typical field study. I have a fascinating organism to work with. I have used some very creative ways of solving problems, and I am thwarted by small sample size, which is the curse of ecology, right? As I have mentioned, if you were here in the previous talk, the American burying beetle is an endangered species. It used to be found in 35 states east of the Rockies and is now found in a mere 10% of its historical distribution. I have the pleasure of working in one of the larger remaining populations, and that is found in Muskogee County, Oklahoma, at Camp Gruber Military Training Site. The American burying beetle is a nocturnal organism. It's active between April and September, and reproduction is thought to occur in June and July. Now, these organisms, as the name implies, American burying beetle, are actually carrion feeders, and we use a wide variety of resources. The American burying beetle is unique in that it is a non-social insect but exhibits biparental care. When a male finds a carcass for reproduction, it emits pheromones to attract females. The male and female that win the carcass will then potentially move it before burying it. To bury it, they use their bodies very much like Tonka trucks, disturbing up the soil and sinking the carcass down into the soil. They will then cover it. The male and female will then use their mandibles to remove any fur or feathers, and then they will secrete antibacterial and antifungal materials from oral and anal orifices. They also have commensal mites that travel with them. And these commensal mites are thought to actually assist them by eating off fly eggs, which would actually serve as competitors for the carcass. At Camp Gruber Military Training Site, Muskogee County, we survey 59 land condition trend analysis sites annually. Each of these transects is comprised of 8 baited pitfall traps baited with rotten chicken gizzards. These are surveyed for 3 consecutive trap nights and checked before 10 o'clock in the morning. Whenever we are performing our trapping events, we clip the elytra and we mark our American burying beetles with a unique bee tag, which we then use to estimate travel distances and mark recapture information. Now, Nicrophorus americanus are considered to be habitat generalists because using these methodology, we can trap them into a wide variety of habitats. And it's generally thought that among the wide variety of hypotheses to explain their decline, that perhaps habitat loss and disturbance may not be as important as the loss of appropriately sized carcasses necessary for feeding and for reproduction. That bears the question, if we can actually trap them into a wide variety of habitats, do they, for some reason, have any habitat requirements for their reproduction? And are they indeed carcass limited in their reproduction, and what characterizes their dynamics in situ? So we're using sites that are the exact same ones as we use during our survey events. There are 9 habitats that exist at Camp Gruber based on vegetation assemblages. We selected 2 replicate sites of each of these 9 habitat types. These sites were selected based on the abundance of American burying beetles from previous survey events. We wanted to focus our effort where we knew the beetles could be trapped too. We also selected sites via access, and we picked areas with a variety of soil characteristics based on soil maps of Camp Gruber. Now, we have an unusual method of looking at reproduction. We actually put 200-gram dead rats and tied them to string and secured this to a sewing machine bobbin on a metal spike. Now, when the American burying beetles go to bury their carcass, it would be very difficult to find the carcass once it got buried. So we use the fishing line to track the burial. That also gives us information on how far the beetles carried the carcass before burying it. So this was a very important and useful tool. Once we located a burial, we covered it with an enclosure made of hardware cloth. Now, this actually seems like a very good idea until a week or so into the study and we discovered that our American burying beetles were escaping from our enclosure. We then went on to cover the enclosure with plastic screening like you would use to repair a door, and that was a bad idea as well because they can chew through that. While our organisms were developing, we collected soil information. We measured soil compaction, soil temperature at two depths, and topsoil and subsoil samples were collected to determine each of these characteristics. While this process was going on, we monitored our enclosures every other day, looking for possible emergence. When emergence was completed, we excavated the burial chamber and measured its characteristics. In 2006, we provided 60 rats. Of those, 9 were buried, so that is a 6.7 burial rate. These 9 were buried at 6 different LCTA sites. However, only one site actually had successful emergence. So the orange spots on the map are those that had burial. Now, obviously, if I only have successful emergence from one site, I cannot do statistics on the reproductive success. So all of my statistics will be based on burial rates. We had 4 newly enclosed American bearing beetles that emerged, so a very small sample size. We did, however, have another species of Nicrophorus that was very abundant, relatively speaking, and this was Nicrophorus marginatus. We had 47 Nicrophorus marginatus that emerged from 3 burial sites. 8 of these Nicrophorus marginatus emerged from the same burial as we had our 4 successful American bearing beetles. So this is one of the few instances of brood sharing. And this is unusual because when we find marginatus and americanus in traps, the marginatus are killing off the americanus. Now, this 2006 seems to be a fairly good story. The hot spot for burial and for subsequent emergence for the American bearing beetle and for the marginatus, which is shown on your right, correlate with site 10. So that is the darkest spot on the map. So it seems like a good story. Where you find the greatest number of these beetles, you have the greatest burial rates. We also found that emergence was approximately 2 weeks more rapid than what you find in Nebraska, and I presume that was because of the increased temperatures of the soil in Oklahoma. Now, one thing to notice, this is Nicrophorus in general, so it's Nicrophorus marginatus and Nicrophorus americanus. We found that the carcass were moved on average 31 centimeters. We did have a few long trekkers of 1 meter. The average depth of burial in 2006 was 15 centimeters, with chamber width and length of 12 and 14 centimeters, respectively. We did not find burial associated with habitat. However, we did find that burial was associated with some of our soil characteristics. When soil compaction, nitrogen, potassium, organic matter, and clay were low, burial was more likely to occur. Now, then we had another year of funding. So we went out and did the study again. We used the same sites, the same methodology. However, in 2007, we didn't bother putting an enclosure on a burial site unless we had visual confirmation that it was American bearing beetle burying. We also modified our enclosures. We thought we would outsmart the beetles by putting in roof flashing to a depth of 15 centimeters, which was the average depth of the burial chamber. In 2007, we provided 200 rats for burial, and 30 were buried. These were buried at 10 different land condition trend sites, and you'll note that all the orange spots indicate burial sites, and the size of the spot indicates the number of burials. So we had a few sites that were very abundant, with as many as 6 burials occurring. We had a whole 8 parents that emerged from the 6 burial sites, and a whopping 7 newly enclosed individual ABBs, American bearing beetles. So once again, I am cursed with an incredibly small sample size and will be unable to tell you about their reproductive success, only their burial. Now, as you're looking at this map, this is the 2007 survey data. And once again, each of the dark spots indicate hot spots for numbers of beetles captured per trap night. This does not correlate with burial. So my 2006 nice easy story that where you have the most beetles, you have the most burial, doesn't work in 2007. We also found that in 2007, our development was slowed. We're now within the range of what's published in Nebraska. So 2007 took an additional 2 weeks before the beetles started to emerge. Carcasses were moved the same distance as found in 2006. But the average burial depth was a mere 5 centimeters in 2007, whereas in 2006 it was 15. The width and length of the chamber was quite similar. We also found that in 2007 we did have a significant association with habitat. Burial was most likely in the oak-winged elm association. Soil impacts also correlated with what we found in 2006. Clay and soil compaction were significant with burial, so burial was more likely to occur when these two characteristics were low. They were easier to bury. So what have we learned from 2 years of data? Well, habitat might be important for burial. At least we can say that clay and soil compaction plays a role. The lower these characteristics are, the more likely the beetles are to bury. I don't think that they are carcass limited, because in 2006 and 2007 they had the exact same percentage of burial of carcasses, so 6.7 in both years. And we did observe, of course, communal brooding with Nicrophorus marginatus. The ABVs, the American burying beetle, will move a carcass on average 33 centimeters before burying it. The chamber characteristics are variable, mainly the depth. And the depth, I think, is associated with the incredibly rainy year we had in 2006. The observations indicate that the beetles may be very sensitive to water, and I believe that with our very soaked soils during that period, they elected to bury very shallowly. And finally, one thing I've really learned the hard way is that those American burying beetles are very hard to keep from escaping. Special thanks to my field crew of undergraduates and my funding resources. And if you'd like to know how to actually survey an American burying beetle, this is how you do it. So, any questions?
We have time for one brief question.
Yes.
Aside from occasionally getting fed, what are these beetles burying?
Oh, they bury a wide variety of organisms.
What lives there that allows them to persist that is apparently disappeared?
I can't give you anything that's that is at Camp Gruber that wouldn't be found elsewhere, mainly small mammals, small birds, about 200 grams or less. One thing at Camp Gruber is that they have a limited fragmentation, so vertebrate scavengers probably aren't stealing the carcasses away from the beetles as frequently as they would outside.
And we need to move on.
Thank you.